The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very, very good morning. How are you?
Boker Tov. Yes, well, we were hoping to hear some news from Ukraine, from the Prime Minister's visit to the Ukraine, but it's amazingly silent. Not a lot of stuff coming out of the Ukraine following the bread and salt incident.
Yes, and so, quite the incident
involved. Other than that, really sure what's going on in Ukraine.
I tell you, Howard Saxton's in studio, and he's been a banting guy for a long time. Howard, did you see the incident with Sarah Netanyahu when she tossed the bread or dropped the bread or didn't accept the bread? No, she accepted it, but then...
But dropped it on the floor.
Yeah, do you think that that's about banting?
Look, that actually was my first thought. I thought, she's clearly not going to eat their carbs, but maybe there's a more diplomatic way to do it. But Anthony, do you think we haven't heard from the Netanyahus because they've gone to Amman with Rabbi Nachman?
not quite yet. The whole woman thing is only really around Rosh Hashanah. If you haven't booked by now, then there's no ways that you're going to be going to Uman, that's for sure. Oh. And in fact, you probably should be booking for next year Rosh Hashanah around now in order to have any chance of doing that.
So I would pay to see Howard 16 in Uman.
I have seen pictures from Uman. It looks wilder than going to Tomorrowland in Belgium.
Oh, definitely. Must be. And, you know, all those Ibiza festivals, this is wilder.
Dancing on the dusty little sand roads of Uman. Anthony, have you ever done it?
I have not done it. I have to tell you, and from the stories coming out of Uman and you know, some of the reports, I just wondered to myself if this was what Rosh Hashanah was actually meant to be like. You know, one just wonders kind of, you know, our traditional, you know, way that we celebrate things. And then they go off to Uman. And it seems like a completely different world there.
Yeah, just for any of our listeners who have no idea what on earth we are blabbering on about.
And we have no idea what on earth.
Well, not really. it's become more and more popular for Jews and particularly men and men that belong to a certain sort of sect of Judaism to go to Uman in the Ukraine at Rosh Hashanah, which is for the Jewish New Year. And there's a lot of prayer services, but literally thousands upon thousands of men and some women descend on Uman at that time of year. So it's something I have to say has held zero appeal to me, and I'm just not sure that.
And it's amazing how the Ukrainians, the local Ukrainians, respond to it. For them, it's like party time. Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, they have like, it's like holiday season. It's like, you know, Plet in the summer, you know, Uman at Rosh Hashanah. That's really when they have their high season, when they make more money over the Rosh Hashanah time than they do through the rest of the year. Absolutely.
All right. Let's just talk about, the Syrian situation and the Iranian situation. It's reported that Iran is sending an oil tanker to Syria in violation of U.S. sanctions. Now, is this a different oil tanker than the one that was, apprehended and then released from Gibraltar?
Yes, so this is an entirely different one. And of course, the whole story of the oil tanks is becoming more and more, you know, takes up more and more of the press because the Gibraltar one was actually released by Gibraltar court, even though the United States was very much opposed to it. And of course, the British who seized that oil tanker were also not particularly enamored with the decision by the court in Gibraltar. But this is another oil tanker. And I just wonder how you kind of hide oil tankers, you know, because these are oil tankers that are being tracked by security agencies that are kind of sailing undercover from one place to another. And just given the size and, the organization that goes around piloting an oil tanker, you sort of wonder how they try to keep it silent. But we understand that this is an oil tanker, the one that we're speaking about, that's going from Iran to Syria with something like 600,000 barrels of crude oil. that were loaded on near the Iranian coast. Apparently, the tanker was actually deflagged by St. Kitts and Nevis, which was the flag of the tanker, because St. Kitts and Nevis feared retaliation from U.S. sanctions. And so this particular tanker that was under their flag, as soon as they understood that it was being used for the purposes of breaking U.S. sanctions, they immediately they disowned the tanker, you know, more or less. But we understand that the tanker's got to sail via Dubai, and then from Dubai it will refill, and then it begin a month-long journey around the Horn of Africa through the Mediterranean and towards Syria. Now, given that the security agencies are already talking about this and are briefing Fox News and other websites and other news organizations, I guess it's not so much of a secret as they were hoping it would be. But this clearly does violate U.S. sanctions, and it clearly does obviously annoy the U.S. to some degree. And I think it's just more than the significance of the 600,000 barrels of crude oil that will likely land in Syria at some point over the next month or two. It kind of just indicates Iran's determination to simply disregard, act with impunity, do whatever they wish, without any issues about what the consequences could be. And I think that this has increasingly become Iran's attitude, specifically towards the U.S., but clearly towards the Western world in general. And so I'm guessing that, you know, the Israeli security services will be watching this, as will U.S. security services. And I'm guessing that the oil will probably land in Syria, and it'll be used by Syria for whatever the purposes are that it was intended. The Iranians are clearly supporting Syria. The Iranian economy is in tatters over these sanctions that have been applied to it. But in spite of that, in spite of the fact that their own economy at home is really in a disaster zone, they are still continuing to support Syria and other renegade organizations, terror organizations, Hamas, Hezbollah, whoever they are. And obviously this is costing the Iranian economy a lot of money, and one wonders how long Iran is actually going to be able to keep this up. You know, we'll have to be watching to see, but it seems as if though Iran's almost more determined to put a finger in the US's eye than it is to take control of its own local economy.
Yeah, it certainly would seem so. An elite Israeli naval unit recently completed a training exercise alongside U.S. Special Forces. What's known about this exercise?
Well, I like this story. First of all, the name of the exercise was quite amusing. It was called Exercise Noble Rose. And I've no idea where they chose that name from, but there it is. It goes under the name of Noble Rose. And this is the Israeli Navy's Shayetet Shlosh Esrei, which is one of the most elite naval units, naval commando units. They cooperated with the U.S. Army Special Forces, and this was an exercise that ended towards the end of last week. And apparently this was a drill that simulated different scenarios in which troops had to take over hijacked vessels at sea, take troops from enemy territories, and it was led and commanded by Shayetet Shlosh Esrei, the Israeli naval unit, and obviously was in conjunction with the relevant U.S. headquarters. But apparently the drill showed up some of the advanced and different capabilities that the different units are able to show. It was designed to deepen cooperation and professional discourse, apparently, between the IDF and the U.S. So it just, again, shows that the U.S. and Israel are very much cooperating in the field at a very, very low level in terms of, you know, cooperating and being able to work together with each other. And once again, you know, we've referred to this on a few occasions before, but I think that it is relevant to mention that it's, again, you know, kind of, it smells a little bit like some of the work that might be going on in the Straits of Hormuz right now, where, of course, the U.S. has led this naval mission to protect ships going through the Straits, and Israel is reported or reputed or rumored to have joined the force, even though that hasn't necessarily been confirmed. But in this kind of exercise does point to the fact that Israel may well be involved in that naval task force that's been set up in the Straits of Hormuz. And, you know, it comes alongside another incident or another event that's been happening in Israel, where a group of military and political leaders from around the world have been hosted in Israel to meet with military officials, just to give these visiting delegates opportunity to speak directly to some of the leadership and some of the people on the ground within the Israeli military and security area, give them a little bit of exposure to some of the things that Israel is doing, some of the fight that Israel is having to make along the Gaza border, and you know, the issue of armed conflict, as well as lone wolf terror activities, and the, just the different types of combat that the Israeli IDF is needing to confront, and which other armies around the world don't have a good training ground, or certainly nowhere near as consistent and constant as what the IDF is being exposed to. So just another indication of some of the cooperation that's going on between the IDF and various other countries and militaries and political establishments around the world. And I think that this is becoming more and more of a thing. It's becoming more and more common to see this cooperation going on, not to speak, of course, of the Israeli arms industry, which is supplying many, many arms and a lot of ammunition to different militaries around the world. A lot of that's been done undercover, and we don't get to know about it, but there is certainly a huge amount of cooperation that's going on at that level.
Yeah, absolutely. Nathan says, Boker Tov, Jews, especially the Breslevers, travel to Oman to connect spiritually with Rabbi Nachman from Breslev. He asked his followers to visit his grave after his death and promised them protection and benefits for the next world for all those who visit it. I certainly hope there are other ways to do so these days. Anthony, a great story that I mentioned to our listeners earlier today. Obviously a very sad story, but one I think with a very powerful ending. A recalcitrant husband has been prevented by the chief rabbinate from burying his mother until he's willing to grant a divorce order to his wife. I think this is an incredible story. Please tell us about it.
Well, what I know about it is obviously the background to all of this is the halachic area of divorce, of which I am absolutely no expert at all. But what I do know is obviously that when a couple decides to separate, that the couple are obliged, I think, to grant each other divorce orders. And what we've seen for so long.
No, so the way it happens is that a man has to give his wife the get. She has to accept. So he has to hand it to her,
exactly.
And she has to accept it. And and unfortunately, some men use it either for to punish their wives just for pure cruelty, or to extort financial gain and get them or their families to pay him a lot of money in order to give a get. And in this case, he had refused for, I think, 2 years.
Ten years.
Oh, sorry. He had got married. Years. He had got remarried in the United States 2 years ago or something like that.
So this is the whole strange story that, you know, when I say give each other, I did, you know, mean obviously not only that the man has to give the get, but indeed the wife has to accept it. So there's an element of giving in that acceptance. And it's highly unusual for wives to refuse to accept a get. That seems to be almost a non-existent situation, but there are a lot of unfortunate stories about men who are not prepared to offer the get in the first place, which obviously for the reasons that you referred to, Howard, and then we get this creation of a situation where the woman is unable to become remarried, to move on with her life. She becomes what's called in Hebrew aguna. She becomes a chained woman, which means she's really unable to form relationships, and this is a very, very problematic area. In recent years, we've seen actively the rabbinate becoming involved to somehow force men to offer their wives a get in order to allow them to move on. Now, I don't know how halachically this sits in terms of forcing people to do things which they are supposed to do of their own accord. But I do know, for example, that in Israel, men have been imprisoned, that their bank accounts have been closed down, that they have been denied work, that they've really been sanctioned in a very dramatic way for not being prepared to give their wives a get. Now, this particular story is cooperation between the U.S. and Israel, because the man himself lives in the U.S., as does his wife. He somehow managed to find an alternative rabbinate who was prepared to marry him despite the fact that he didn't give his wife a get. So he's been married. She's been unable to move on. His mother passed away. The family decided that the mother would be buried in Israel. The body was actually shipped to Israel from New York. And the Israeli chief rabbinate decided, in conjunction with the American rabbis, that they would not allow that mother to be buried until this man has finally given his wife a get, which I understand took place. The reason that this is so unusual is because the burial of the dead is one of the most foremost halachic commands in Judaism. And the fact that this was held as a kind of a ransom to force him to give his wife a get is a very, very interesting departure from the norm. And I think that it is welcome that finally a little bit of sense has prevailed and that this man has been forced to allow his wife to move on and to establish a new life for herself after separating from him.
Absolutely, and of course, well done to the rabbinate for taking this stance. It is 8 o'clock. Anthony Reich, we'll chat to you tomorrow, same time.